It's time for our weekly update on Congress with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. Last night we saw primary results from Mississippi and Iowa.
Mississippi will go into a runoff election after a campaign with some significant drama, and Joni Ernst is hoping to make history in Iowa after taking the GOP Senate nomination. Iowa has never sent a woman to Congress.
And two controversies continue in Congress with the release of a prisoner of war, Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, and legislation aimed at addressing the VA scandal now facing the Senate. Paul Singer joins us each week at this time. Paul, welcome back.
Thanks very much. Good to be with you. How are you, Rob?
I'm doing good. How about you?
So far, so good.
Well, this release, Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, the White House exchanged five Taliban leaders, evidently detained at Guantanamo, for his release. Congress, many members of Congress, not happy about this. Would Congress usually play a role in this kind of deal?
Well, Congress is supposed to be briefed. They're not. I think part of the issue here is that Congress feels that they were kept in the dark. It's not necessarily that they would play a part in a deal like this, as it is that the administration is supposed to tell them that they're about to do it. In this case, it came as a surprise to everybody, and Democrats and Republicans both on Capitol Hill are saying, you know, we got no warning of this at all. It was a done deal before anybody told us. And in fact, even as we speak, a bunch of White House officials are heading up to Capitol Hill now to brief senators now on what we know about Bergdahl. There has been some question about exactly why he was captured in the first place. He was the only prisoner that we had in Afghanistan. And there is some suggestion that he essentially walked off his duty and was captured because he had more or less quit. Mm-hmm. And so there's a great deal of concern about both the nature of how he came to be captured and the nature of how this prisoner swap took place, particularly even the fact that Americans have generally maintained that we do not negotiate with terrorists and we don't engage in prisoner swaps.
So how much of the anger from Congress has been kind of this breach of protocol, not informing Congress in advance, and how much of this has been criticism of the deal itself, the exchange itself?
You know, I think it starts with the concern, as always with Congress, it starts with the concern over their priorities, sorry, their prerogatives. And their jurisdiction. They get mad when they don't get a proper protocol and they don't get briefed. Then you get the political element here of the question of, did we trade too much? Are we allowing these five Taliban guys to go back in the field and you know, re-engage the battle against Americans or against Afghans in the field? That becomes a legitimate debate. But then, of course, you have your political season going on here, so they want to blame Obama for handling it wrong or being having the wrong position on terrorism. It's hard sometimes to separate the legitimate concern about was this an appropriate transaction from the political opportunity to make a point to blame Obama for something bad.
Whether it's for those policy reasons or for political reasons, are we going to see panels, say, in the House run by Republicans looking into this deal?
Oh, yeah. Well, you'll definitely see a plenty of opportunity for oversight. I would be, you know, the House is not going to create another special committee like they have on Benghazi, but they will definitely be having the House. And even, I think, from the Senate, they're going to be having oversight hearings to look into how this trade went down. There's still some question about exactly was the country of Qatar serving simply as our, did they come to us first, or were they serving as our missionaries here on this exchange? You know, I think people are very concerned that Americans did not reach out to the Taliban and say, well, let's make a deal.
And I know we can't read the administration's mind here. They've presented this as an oversight. Is it likely that it was an oversight that they didn't reach out to Congress first, or was this one of those act first, apologize later, you know, don't ask for permission first in a way situations?
Yeah. I honestly, I don't know, mm-hmm. Rob. I mean, it would not surprise me, given the political season that we're in, if the administration thought that it may not be to their advantage to talk to Congress first. On the other hand, I also think that they clearly underestimated the reaction. They were expecting a lot of praise for rescuing an American soldier. I think they underestimated, first of all, how much Congress would be concerned about the terms of this bargain, and then second of all, I think they really underestimated the concern about Bergdahl's background and whether he was really, you know, an upstanding member of the military. Now, I will tell you that USA Today had an editorial today, and I don't really usually read our editorials at all, by you know, for reasons of principle. I don't want to know what we think, but I will say that we had an interesting editorial today about this whole question of, you know, does Bergdahl's action matter? I mean, don't we have a commitment to our soldiers that we rescue them no matter what their sort of, you know, moral failings may have been? It's an interesting, I think, an interesting debate for us to have.
We'll keep watching that story. Another thing that came out this week that Congress has an interest in, new EPA regulations with the goal of cutting carbon emissions from power plants, mainly going to affect coal power plants by the year 2030. First, this is coming from the administration. Does Congress have a say in these regulations?
Well, you know, Congress has a say in these regulations because, to some degree, these are authorized by the Clean Air Act. I mean, there's been this long debate. Congress passed a law saying that EPA can regulate pollutants. And EPA said, well, then carbon should be a pollutant. And ultimately, they won in court. I mean, they're allowed to do this, right? So let's back up first. Congress actually has had a role in this thing. They created the law that EPA is using to regulate this, first thing. Second thing, these regulations are not final. They're going to spend a lot of time taking comment and receiving feedback and redesigning the rules as they do in any rulemaking process. So Congress can be involved in that process as well. And third, Congress still does have a trigger mechanism. They don't use it very often, that they're allowed to basically veto rules that the agencies pass. That's going to be down the road a piece. We'll see where we are in a couple of years when these rules are you know, going to be final. You're not going to see a whole lot of activity, actual regulatory activity out of this process for quite a while. And sure, Congress is going to have hearings, and they're going to say these are dumb rules, these are bad rules, they're bad for whatever. And then other people will say, no, this is good, this is important, it's going to drive a lot of innovation. I'll tell you, I covered the Clean Air Act, you know, 15 years ago, and it was supposed to bankrupt America, if you believed the detractors, and it hasn't. So who knows? Maybe over time we'll discover that these rules are not going to be quite as burdensome as they're currently made out to be.
Well, let's look at the political fallout. Say you had a hypothetical Senate race that looked like it might be a close one in a coal-producing state like Kentucky. How's that going to affect that?
Well, I mean, I believe, and forgive me because it's been a long night, but I believe Allison Lundgren Grimes, the Democrat running in Kentucky, has already put out an ad today saying basically, send me to Congress so I can tell President Obama that his EPA regulations are stupid. This is the Democrat. Yeah? So there are a bunch of Democrats running away from these rules.
Well, hey, speaking of races for the Senate, a couple of primaries yesterday, Mississippi and Iowa. Interesting Republican primary there in Mississippi. What happened there?
A six-term senator, the establishment senator Cochran from Mississippi, did not win his primary. Now, he didn't lose it either. Mm-hmm. He is stuck in a runoff against a Tea Party challenger named Chris McDaniel. This was a real bloody battle. They had at one point somebody who had supported McDaniel at some point went into the nursing home to take pictures of Cochran's bedridden wife. I mean, it got really ugly. Now the concern is it's three more weeks for this runoff of these two candidates slugging it out. The Republicans are concerned this is not going to be good for them at all. The Democrats nominated a guy, Travis Childers. He seemed like a perfectly, you know, non-controversial candidate amongst the Democrats, and he can just sit here and wait for this battle to play out for 3 weeks. That's going to be an advantage for the Democrats. Oh, now, whether they can ultimately win a statewide race in Mississippi seems, you know, a bit of a stretch, but it's not good for the Republicans.
And Democrats are hoping that the Tea Party-affiliated challenger beats the long-term senator. They think they might have a better chance in that race.
Yeah. Yeah, and McDaniel at one point he was doing a lot of radio back in the day, talk radio, where he said a lot of fairly remarkable things and incendiary things. So there'd be plenty of fodder for a general election campaign.
And I think it was a five-way Republican primary for the Senate race in Iowa. What do we know about the winner there?
The winner is most famous for a television ad called Squeal, where she pointed out that she grew up on a farm castrating hogs, so she knows how to go to Washington and cut the pork. She was able to unite the Tea Party and Sarah Palin behind her, as well as some of the establishment Republican groups like the Chamber of Commerce, and she just wiped up the floor with her opponents, and she is now in pretty good position to run against Congressman Bruce Braley, the Democrat. They're running to replace Tom Harkin, one of the liberal lions of the Senate, who has decided to retire. And the Democrats are really in danger of losing a seat here if Jody Ernst can carry this one off.
And as we wrap it up, she'd be the first woman in Congress from Iowa?
Yeah. Go figure. Iowa's never elected a woman to Congress. So odd little factoid of history, but yep, she'd be it.
Another race for us to watch between now and November. Paul, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, Rob. Have a great day.
You too. That's Paul Singer. He's politics editor at USA Today. He joins us each Wednesday at this time to share the latest from the Capitol.